Cool. So, hello, everyone, and welcome to a brand new episode, slightly delayed, of Shipping and Handling. I'm your host, Jennifer Udden.
And I'm your co-host, Bridget Smith.
It's been a while. I've been traveling. We've been busy.
Jen was on vacation.
I was on vacation. I went to Prague.
Yes.
I kept turning corners and being like, Carew was here. Which, if you've read the Daughter of Smoke and Bone series, you know what I'm talking about, because she's the best, and those books are my life. I'm going to turn you down slightly because
am I too loud now?
You look a little crazy. Let's see. Let's see how this goes. Yeah, we're also experiencing this weird thing where it's either Bridget is haunted and can't be heard, or both of our microphones are haunted.
I give off magical energy, and it just diminishes
magical
the
quiet
audio.
Energy. Apparently.
Just slowly, I draw energy from the electronic devices around me. That's also why your computer's battery is draining so slowly.
No, that's because my computer took a bath in Diet Coke the other day. So it's actually a miracle that's working. And everyone, you know, say a prayer to whatever deity or not you pick. And yes.
I wonder what saint is the patron saint of electronics doused in liquid.
That's an incredibly specific saint.
You know,
I would like that book. Bridget Smith's Guide to Incredibly Specific Saints. It sounds like a McSweeney's article.
Yes, it does.
Well, anyway, one of the things that happened whilst I was traveling was that an article was published in the New York Times, and we'll provide a link to it,
yes.
Talking about it. It sort of talked about it as though there was like a huge spate of books coming. And it sounded like there was definitely a few coming, but it was talking about the trend of publishers turning to YouTube personalities for books.
Yep.
And the sort of various levels of success. I mean, most of the ones we're talking about, it sounded like lifestyle vloggers, like
a
people who talk about makeup,
and
there's like
recipes,
a cookbook one.
Yeah.
And like I know Grace Helbig had one, but I think that was more sort of like a humor book. I may have just made that up. But the main sort of focus of the article was one that was based on a YouTube series about a girl being haunted.
Yes, and the name of it, a teenage girl whose family moved into a haunted house.
Yes, which is such a great idea.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I wanted to talk about it because it sort of, I thought, fit in with a lot of the stuff we've been talking about in terms of writing to trends and, you know, when things are successful and when they aren't. I mean, I have not read the book. I was actually sent a copy by the publisher, and really looking forward to reading it because I sort of dived in and read a couple pages. I was like, oh, this is actually really exciting.
Nice.
But I haven't seen the YouTube series either, so I'm not familiar with it.
Coming into it blind.
Coming into it completely blind. And one of the things that struck me about the article was they talked about how this wasn't necessarily the most organic of projects.
Yes. I was reading this article, and which Jen sent to me over GChat, and then I was sending responses back to her, and I was like, oh, this is really cool. I'm really all in on teenage girls creating these weird YouTube things or doing some weird art thing in their spare time.
Or even any kind of art thing.
Yeah.
It doesn't even have to be a weird art thing.
No, any kind of art thing. Teenage girls creating stuff is awesome. And so I was all in on this, her... It, like, turned into a full-time job. She makes more money a month than I do from YouTube series.
Not that we're bitter or jealous or anything. My raise got eaten up by taxes. Yay!
But I was like, this is really cool. It's something she's been working on for several years, and it's now turning into a book. That's really great. And then it sort of gradually came to light that she and her mother had been approached by a producer who had come up with this idea based on the fact that the second most popular search term on YouTube at the time was ghost. And so he was like, we're going to create a YouTube series about this girl in a haunted house. And it's like, oh, that is much less exciting for the things that I care about.
Well, and one of the questions that the article didn't answer for me was, because it sounded like she had a lot of input in it, but I was not at all clear how much of the story was her input, or how much of the sort of like writing of the videos was her input.
It did seem, she's talked a lot about how the character that she plays is like 98% her, just as a person.
Yeah.
But it didn't mention how much she works on the story. And they did say, and she was very open about the fact that this book that was coming out under her name and based on this series was very heavily ghostwritten.
And
The Haunting of Sunshine
Alyssa Shinewell is the co-author, or okay. the author, I guess.
Yeah.
But it was called The Haunting of Sunshine Girl, and it's out from Weinstein Books, which makes a lot of sense. It's a film, you know, film company. It's a tie-in. It's actually a really great cover.
It is, yeah.
And it's got a blurb from R.L. Stine. We're looking at it right now. Nice. I guess that this sort of, it brings up a lot of questions, because on the one hand, you know, she's obviously done an enormous amount of work.
Yes.
For the series. Yeah. But on the other hand, it's clear that she's sort of involved in it in a way that she sort of almost seemed detached from. Like she's
it
clear that she's
seem like her project.
Yeah, it's something that I'm excited to be working on, but not something that I feel like passionate about. I don't know. I have many feelings about it, and I know that since you represent was actually really amazed that your book did not come up in that article, because that seemed like a really high profile omission from, you know.
What can we say? Well, there was also another one that I don't recall if they mentioned it in this article, but it was a from another teenage vlogger who we can talk about my project afterwards, because it's not ghostwritten. It's straight up written by this awesome writer. So, so there was one who was, I guess her name is Zoe Sugg, and she goes by the handle Zoella.
Yes.
And so that one, she's another teenage girl who, and I believe this book was published first in the UK.
Yes.
I don't think it ever really took off in the US.
No.
And it turns out that there's actually a huge contingent. A lot of the fans of YouTube are UK based. Mm. I don't know why that is, but it's an interesting
thing. It rains a lot. They're indoors a lot. I don't know.
It's true. This one, it was published under her name, as though she had written it, and it came out after the book was published that it was, again, very heavily ghostwritten. And a lot of her teenage fans felt very betrayed by that, which I think is fair.
Well, and it's interesting, too, and, you know, if anyone is sort of a follower of this, the Paige McKenzie Haunting of Sunshine Girl, you know, series, we'd love to hear your input on, you know, sort of how you feel about this. But I would be mad if I thought that something was sort of like authentic, quote unquote.
Yeah. Yeah. It turned out
to be sort of like adult manipulation.
Yeah. And it's one thing to, you know, say up front, as they are with Sunshine Girl, that it's co-written, and she's saying, I don't know how to write a book. Of course I had help on this, and that's honest. And I appreciate that. When you say that it's by this person and it's not,
definitely not.
I can see why someone who thought that was authentic would feel betrayed.
And I was over in London, I think, when it was coming out. Or maybe the timing wasn't right, but I remember it was, I remember reading some of the reviews, and the early reviews were sort of puzzled, because they were like, well, it's not great, but like, this girl's like 19 and she's like a YouTube star, and it's pretty good for someone who's not from, you know, who doesn't necessarily have a literary background. But then when it came out that it was like ghostwritten, it's like, it's not even by her, and it's not good.
It was interesting to see that, because we were still in the stages with, well, that was coming out when that was all in the news. We were still in the stages of where my client Emma Mills's book was not like in ARC form or anything. We didn't have a cover yet. It was still, it was in manuscript. And I was like, well, this one, either she is keeping it, she has like some weird co-writer that she is keeping a secret from even me, her agent, or it was actually written by her.
Yeah.
And it's, she is a very, very good writer. She has a really natural ear for voice and dialogue and just sentence structure, which
is not at all surprising if you watch her videos.
Exactly.
All
and
those
so
cute cuts to like her high school self. And I bedazzled it. Sidebar, when is she coming to New York, and will she be a guest on this podcast?
I am sure she will. We'll have to ask her. When I read the manuscript first, and then I watched her videos, I was like, I need to work with this girl. She's fantastic. And so I think that it really is, there are certain people who just have that natural voice and are able to apply it in two different directions at once. If you can use the writing skills for both a YouTube video and for writing a book. And so I think that it's actually, it is a place where you can find a lot of talent. And so I'd be interested to see if there are people who have, you know, good numbers, but not the superstar numbers that a lot of these, a lot of these branded books that are tie-in books that are coming out. 'Cause Emma's numbers are great, but they're not, you know, millions, which some of these people have. And so I'd be interested to see. I think it's, there is a lot of depth of talent there, and it's just hard to make the connections to.
Well, and one of the things that I was actually really surprised, like genuinely surprised, the article didn't bring up was I don't think that they mentioned John Green anywhere.
No.
And, you know, and normally I'm just like, leave John Green out of this.
he's not relevant.
He's had enough publicity, bless his heart. He just wants to be left alone, kind of. You know, but they didn't bring him up at all. And I think that there is a big difference between that kind of audience, the sort of, like, hyper-involved community or audience of, like, the nerd fighters and, you know, that whole world, and the sort of it's like a difference between sort of like interactive and spectator sports.
Yeah.
That's the sort of difference that it feels like to me, you know, sort of like the, you know, the, that whole, for better or worse, that whole sort of nerd fighter umbrella is very involved in like creating and building community. And, you know, they don't always do it right and they don't always do it well, but you know, that's sort of their aim. And I think that the stuff that has come out of that world has been, I don't see better, but sort of like more authentic feeling in a way than many of these sort of branded, sort of like, I'm a personality and now we're going to have a book, you know, that kind of thing. Does that make sense? I don't know if that made any sense. I mean, and not to say that like, you know, someone who sort of is branded and is under sort of a very sort of heavily controlled sort of brand umbrella isn't talented or doesn't, you know.
No.
You know, doesn't have something good to offer in the literary world. But I think it's different. And I think that if we pretend that it's the same, we're doing everyone a disservice.
So, like, this girl who plays Sunshine Girl, she's an actress.
Yeah, she's very good.
And so it's...
from what I've seen.
Yeah. it doesn't mean that she has a certain talent and she's good at what she does and clearly is an engaging viewer or engaging presence that a lot of people like to watch.
Yeah.
But acting and writing are different skills and different talents, and so sometimes they combine and sometimes they don't.
Yeah. I mean, I'm surprised that they didn't try to make this into a movie instead of turning it in. Like, why did they...
Well, they are apparently it's a Weinstein TV show.
I'm sure it's a Weinstein company.
Yeah, they're
books, so I'm sure that there's something coming down the pike, but that, to me, would have been a more natural extension.
Yeah.
And actually, like, a probably more lucrative extension of the branding, you know?
Which actually, the fact that that publishing a book is not the most lucrative thing you can do with your time or energy, and the fact that so many celebrities who are famous for other things still want to have books published and still consider it a badge of honor to have a New York Times bestseller, I think that that's great.
It's wonderful. I mean, and it's bless their hearts, they're keeping us in business.
Yeah.
I mean, it's interesting, and you know, there's always that sort of like, you know, part of me that's like, it's, you know, this is like a weird sellout thing, when like, I would gladly sell out. If the right thing came along where, like, I, you know, just made like a really obscene amount of money off of it and people were like, that's shit, you know, I'd be like, I can't hear you, I'm sitting atop my money pile. Sorry, I'm in Bermuda in the house that my client built. I can't hear you. I mean, I don't think any agent has ever grown rich off of their clients, but
you grow stable off of an extremely successful client.
basically. But yeah, so we had some feelings. Some feelings on this issue.
Yeah, and it will... It's one other thing that this article in the New York Times brought up is that, well, granted they were using book scan numbers, and book scan numbers are only print. And so
I find hilarious in this day and age.
Like, are you kidding me?
Well, it's just how like the Nielsen ratings are like, you know, 10 people with TVs and like a special remote in their, you know, watching Jeopardy alone. Like, that's
not actually,
like, this is the system. This is the system. We know that Big Brother has better numbers. Surely we can work something out.
And they're the radio system is, again, people with little notebooks who write down when they listen to radio stations and like which stations they listen to.
Oh, Jesus.
Which of course does not.
They get out the wax tablets and send them to Rome.
And this is interesting. When I was working in radio, is that they were sort of trying to find some way of getting more realistic numbers, such as when you walk into a store and the store is playing a radio station. They're not, people who are like writing in their little booklets are not going to go ask what radio station is playing in the store and like write it down. So you wind up with numbers that you get what this individual wants to listen to rather than what is actually happening in the world.
Yeah.
So they were trying to figure out some way of, like, giving them little devices that could recognize the radio stations that were playing.
Just combine, like, Shazam with some kind of reporting app.
Exactly.
There, Silicon Valley. I just gave you a freebie. Just saying. Fix it.
And I don't know why, but
oh my god, can you imagine a Nielsen app? I would download that shit in a heartbeat.
Oh my god, yes.
I would be rating shit all the time. Like, I'm watching Hannibal right now. Yeah, 6 hours later, I'm still watching Hannibal. This is the streaming service I'm using. You know? Like, yeah. Come on.
Yeah.
Anyway, so you were saying about the book scan numbers.
Yes. Oh, so they were saying about these YouTube things. They only mentioned one or two, but apparently the book scan numbers were terrible. I wonder how many of these people who go out and look for or are, like, watching media on YouTube on the internet are probably also the people buying ebooks.
Yeah.
So I don't think that I'm imagining that the book scan numbers and the publisher numbers are very, very different.
Yes. I would be interested to know, you know, how those are doing in ebook numbers. I mean, and also, like, yeah, it's just, and it's all so much, whenever I talk to anyone about this, they're like, how much of publishing is guesswork? And I'm like, most. I should just get a tattoo on my face that says, it depends. Just point to it whenever someone asks me a question. But, well, I think we have not solved that issue.
No. And it's an ongoing question about whether people who like one thing will transfer over to other things. And this is something that happens actually even within the internet. There's a web series that I enjoy and watch regularly called Classic Alice,
mm-hmm.
Which is about this girl in college who has like this safe, happy little life, and her writing professor is like, you don't have any experiences and like you're afraid of emotions and your writing is kind of dry because of it, like, and it's technically skilled but not emotionally resonant. She's like, I'm gonna go and I'm gonna experience the world through the eyes of these classic novels. And so she like reenacts what they do. And so the first one is Crime and Punishment. She's like, I'm gonna go commit a crime. And so she steals the she doesn't steal the answer, she steals the test that she's going to be taking. And so it's really cute. The characters are great. The actors mm-hmm. are great.
Yeah.
But they recently had a crowdfunding campaign. They've got like 10,000 subscribers on YouTube. It's kind of small scale, but, enjoyable. I recommend it. We'll put a link in the thing. but they did a crowdfunding campaign recently. And they were trying to raise $60,000 so that they could do another batch of episodes. And they broke down exactly why they were asking for all this much and everything. And as they pointed out, if every one of their YouTube subscribers gave them $6, they would have solved this in minutes. Like, that was how simple it was. And they'd already had 40 episodes or something at mm-hmm, that point.
Yeah.
So you've got a couple hours worth of entertainment there. That's worth $6.
Yeah.
They really, really struggled to reach their goal. They didn't make it in the original allotted time, and so they talked to Indiegogo, who granted them another month, and they got to a point, and then someone offered to, if they could get to 50,000, to kick in the last 10,000.
Nice.
Which was great.
Thanks, person. Did they get to the 50?
They did.
Oh, yes. Good. I was like, yes. No! Don't let this be one of those stories.
Tragic ending, but yeah, it was interesting how they have a lot of people a substantial number of people who just needed to throw in a few bucks and to be able to support something that they enjoy. And it's hard to get people to do that.
Yeah. And it's really, you know, I think back to my youth of, you know, pirating music with merry abandon. And I think I'm such a fucking asshole because, you know, I mean, I want to say that I didn't know any better, but, like, you know, I did. And the you know, most people think that if it's on the internet and you can get it, it's free. It's free. And there's no cost to anyone, and no one is hurt by it. It's like, it's a victimless crime. And I was just like, it's not.
Artists are suffering.
All the artists are suffering. You know, for better or worse, you know, Taylor Swift took her shit off Spotify. And I'm just like, you know, I respect that.
Yeah. And honestly, if her doing that leverages better percentages for artists on Spotify, or at least the ones who have a little bit of clout, like, that's great.
Yeah.
It's because Spotify is a huge racket.
It really is.
I use it all the time, but oh my god.
Well, shall we segue into some questions? Since my battery is at 39%.
Oh, let's do it.
This is a race against time, people.
Well, we have one question, a brief question from my client, Tracy Townsend, who is at The Storymatic on Twitter. She asks, what is the most bookish thing you saw in Prague, Jen?
Oh, God. The most bookish. There was a lot that was super bookish.
Well, I saw photos of libraries.
Well, one library in particular. I would say the most bookish thing I did is we sort of hunted out all the places where Kafka had sort of like hung out. So I passed the house where he was born, which is now like a weird sort of themed cafe. And one of the places that he had lived, which is actually hilariously in the Royal Palace complex and is a bookstore that sells mostly books, mostly Kafka books in various languages, but also had like a used copy of a book about Kylie Minogue in the front window, which I just loved. The most bookish thing I did was probably go to the Strahov Monastery and Library.
Ooh.
They have two big library rooms that are basically like if Beauty and the Beast were sort of scaled down to sort of
human size.
There's the Theological Library, which has, you know, they each have like, you know, 40,000 volumes, these beautiful, you know, handwritten, leather bound, beautiful,
nice.
You know, one whole wall is just Bibles in different languages from like the 16th century. And
so they have a Gutenberg Bible?
Probably. I don't know. It wasn't on display. But it was so cool.
You keep that shit in climate control.
I know, right? This was not climate control. And the biggest racket was like, they charge you money to be able to take pictures inside places.
Oh.
Which I think is so clever, because it's like an extra like 100 karuna, which is like $4. I'm like, fuck yes, I'm going to pay $4 to take pictures of this beautiful library. Eventually, like the German tourists behind me were like, ma'am, can we see the library now? I was like, oh, right, I've been standing here for like 10 minutes. but I guess the other thing was just sort of like walking around and being and sort of like having the Lainey Taylor, Daughter of Smoke and Bone experience. Like I kept going back to the Charles Bridge, even though the Charles Bridge is sort of like really touristy and kind of weird. But I was just like, this is where they did the puppet show.
I was going to say, I don't think I would go to a Kafka-themed cafe just because I'd worry there would be cockroaches.
Yeah, well, they don't really. It's funny, they you know, there weren't a lot of Kafka jokes in Prague. Like, you would think that there would be, like, hilarious, you know.
Everyone else does that. They do gimmicky jokes with their famous people.
Yeah. But every store also, like, whether or not they sold books in English, had at least one copy of this one collection, which I wish I had bought, but I, like, ran out of time, of stories about the Golem of Prague.
Oh.
Just like a collection of like stories cool. about like this one time the golem was pissed and punched a bunch of people and Rabbi Lowe was like stop
and the golem stopped
there's like 40 of them but yeah, so that was my literary moments in Prague.
That's fun. Okay, more questions. I should plan this better.
We do this every week.
I know. Okay, here is a question from Colton, our favorite questioner, always reliable. Okay, a quick question. A YA manuscript opens with a prologue and the protagonist is middle grade age. Does the voice need to be middle grade to fit the character at that point in time, or should it be YA to match the rest of the book?
That is incredibly specific and I do not know.
Yes.
The answer is, it depends.
Jen pointed at her face, but you can't see. Yeah.
I mean, if it's a flashback, no. If it's like a in medias res, you know, I'm 12 and this is happening, then yes, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, there's also this put in the standard, like, beware prologues.
Yes. He says in this email that he's having no traction in the query trenches. And so I wonder if the right suggestion might be not to change the voice, but to just leave out the prologue in the query. So when you do like the first 5 pages of the first chapter or whatever, just leave it out entirely.
See, I would, and then just like if they request the full manuscript, then put it back in.
Yeah.
See, I'm not a big fan of that because I like to see, speaking of feeling, you know, deceived by something.
It's true.
I would want to see the book as the author sort of intends it. And, you know, unfortunately that means if it isn't in a shape that I want to read it when they send it in the way that they intend it, that means I'll probably pass. But, you know, if, you know, I would say that if you try that, if one tries that strategy of leaving the prologue off and you're getting traction, maybe look at it, maybe look at leaving off the prologue entirely, because that means that something about your first chapter was
more interesting,
compelling than the prologue.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. I wonder if, I wonder if the material in the prologue could be conveyed within the story. If you could use that for tension within the story, mm-hmm. rather than just stating it up front.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just, again, I find that prologues are more often than not unnecessary.
Yeah. Imagine if Gone Girl had a prologue, how much less good the book would be. Amy Dunn driving down the road, giving the cool girl monologue.
Yeah.
Cut to the beginning of the book. Yeah. That's
hard. I would sort of err on the side of making it feel a little bit more YA, just because the immediate middle grade voice
in a YA query
might make agents think that you don't have a grasp on the YA voice.
Girl, who's blowing up your phone?
I think that's my Duolingo reminder. It is, in fact, my Duolingo reminder.
Sorry, I cannot hear you because I'll be dancing. Sorry.
I would say that try, right? If you can get the feeling of being middle grade or of being that age while sounding like a character a little bit older, that might be the best option if the prologue is completely necessary.
Yeah.
And has to be left in.
Sorry, I keep burping because I've had Diet Coke.
Even after it betrayed you?
Even after it betrayed me. Well, I am consuming it, so it's, you know, I still feel like I'm winning.
Fair.
So I'm like, ha!
I have drunk another of your fellows.
I will eat your family! okay, do we have any more?
Another question from Colton. If we've queried an agent or agency who responds to all queries, or queried an agent with whom we have a brief history, how long do we continue to follow up until we stop reaching out? Don't want to cross these non-responsive agents off my list, nor do I want to hound them. What do y'all suggest?
Well, I hate getting emails like every 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Because some people do that, and it drives me fucking crazy.
At that point, I'm like, well, you are probably going to be a pain for me to work with. Our styles of communication are not going to mesh well.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to pass based on that.
Yeah.
But following up every couple of months is fair. And I think that what I would do is send a couple of follow-ups after a couple of months. And then at some point I would just sort of stop checking in with them and just let them know if something changes.
You get an offer or
you have a new manuscript.
A new manuscript, yeah.
At that point I would send emails and just be like, here, just, I don't know. It's possible you've read this and just have no interest, but I wanted to let you know in the interest of full disclosure. And then just,
because a lot of times, you know, I'm also much faster with no's than I am with yeses. Yeah. So it may be that I have it starred in some kind of like,
yeah, it's in my back, like reread
so because it sounds cool.
Yeah.
So that I can, you know, have more time folder.
Yeah.
But there is nothing that drives me crazier than, you know, not being told that you have an offer.
Yes.
Just assuming.
Yeah.
Like, just assume that I want to know.
Yes.
And tell me. Because if I'm like, oh man, this is really great, I'm sorry it took me 3 months to get back to you. And they're like, oh, I've signed to someone else.
Yeah.
I'm like,
Yeah, there's
if it's been like an unconscionably long time, you know, I understand. But like, still, let us know.
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't hurt you anything to send out one email being like, I know you requested this a year ago, but I have an offer from another agent. And if I then don't respond to that, then whatever.
Yeah.
Or if I offer and you're like, well, it took you a year and someone else's interest to be interested, then you can also, you know, decline my offer and accept a different offer. But I appreciate the courtesy of being told either that or even just withdrawing it.
Yeah.
I don't want to fall in love with something and then not get it because I was underinformed.
Yeah.
There's one thing if I'm allowed to fight for something and I lose it, and then I am heartbroken forever, but
you've been vanquished in battle and you understand. Yes. Yeah, no.
Yeah. So I would say it's for this situation, you can stop following up with them, but keep them updated if anything changes.
Yeah. I agree.
Maybe they'll read it.
I concur.
Get back to you. So.
Well, I think that's all the questions we have. As yes. always, if you have anything that you have a burning desire to know about us, about publishing, about writing, about bacon, I don't know, whatever, feel free to drop us a line at shippingandhandlingpodcast@gmail.com or via Twitter at shippandhandling or via the ask box on our website. So, Bridget, what are you reading these days?
I am currently in the middle of a reread of the Song of the Lioness Quartet by Tamara Pierce.
Nice.
I was talking with some publishing friends on Twitter. I don't remember how this came up, but someone was like, we should do a reread. And so it turned into a book club. And so we are meeting tomorrow to talk about it. And I have to read the last 50 pages of Lioness Rampant tonight.
And so. She had some interesting times recently.
Yeah.
Speaking of saying terrible things on the internet,
I think her problem is the same as Alana's, which is that she is just too quick to lose her temper, and then sometimes says things that she regrets.
Yes, as she should. cool.
So yeah, it's fun. This is a series of books that I am very glad I read as a child, because I am a little less impressed with them as an adult, but also they were extremely formative for me. Just sort of reading these books in which just girls do things, and it's not, or like sometimes it's an issue when they're fighting against stuff, and sometimes it's just they never accept the possibility of failure.
Yeah,
and just living their lives and doing things and making choices for themselves. And so just growing up and reading these books in which it was taken for granted that they were people with agency.
What?
It sort of seeped into my subconscious. And so it became just it affected the way that I view the world. And it's this very reassuring way, I think. So I'm very glad. That's another reason I'm glad that I read them as a child.
It's funny, you know, the things we read and the way that they have, you know, effects on us when we're young and impressionable.
Mm.
For good or bad.
That's true.
sorry, I'm just looking up to see what the last thing I read. I have not, I haven't been doing a whole lot of reading lately because I've been trying to catch up on client manuscripts and requested manuscripts, which I'm really behind on. But I have purchased a lot of books that I'm very excited about. I got a gift certificate from one of my clients, actually, for...
Nice.
Greenlight Books in Brooklyn.
Yes. Okay.
And purchased The Prague Cemetery by Umberto Eco, which I cannot believe I had not read because I sort of make it a point to read everything of his. I think it was one of those things where I was like, I will buy it when it comes out in paperback, and then just sort of forgot. But yes. Now it's in paperback, so I own it now. So my books. So I'm getting ready to start that. And I also bought this book called Jay by Howard Jacobson, I believe it is.
Okay.
And it is about, it's a dystopian novel published by like Hogarth or something, you know, super literary. So because they're the only ones who are allowed to do dystopia now.
Yes.
About a sort of world where people sort of deliberately forget the past.
Okay.
Where like, so there's all these things that people do, but they're not entirely sure why they do them.
Huh.
Like the main character, like the title is a J with two lines through it.
Okay.
Because the main character's father, whenever he says a word that has a J in it, he sort of draws two fingers across his mouth to sort of like erase the letter.
Huh.
But no one knows why he does that. And it's sort of like,
that's weird.
I get the feeling it's probably going to be about anti-Semitism, but I'm not entirely sure.
We'll find out.
But then before that, I'm just looking up the last book I read. I read The Secret, because why not?
Did it work?
Well, I haven't won the lottery yet, so.
I saw a woman on the subway the other day who was reading the sequel to The Secret. And I was like...
The Even More Secret. It's like a National Treasure
like
when they did it.
It's like or something.
It's like a National Treasure when they did a sequel. They had to like invent another larger treasure that somehow no one knew about. I'm like... I'm sorry, you already were, like, jizzing all over, like, the biggest treasure known to man kept by the Knights Templar. And they're like, oh, just kidding, also the Mayans.
Weird.
Like, no, that's not how it works.
Yeah, I was sort of like, if The Secret didn't work for you, what makes you think that the next one will?
And then what was the other book? I bought a book in Prague at one of the English language bookstores that is just one of the Penguin Classics editions of The Good Soldier's Svek, S-V-E-J-K, with lots of accents. And okay. It is one of the sort of famous World War I novels, okay. sort of along with All Quiet on the Western Front, about a sort of hapless Czech soldier who's sort of enlisted against his will and sort of attempts to get to the front, kind of. And it's sort of comic, but it's also really dark. So I own that and have not yet started it. So,
okay. So Jen is in a
little bit of a rut, but, yes. I'm sure that once I'm done with this little spate of manuscript reading, it'll sort of even itself out. So,
yeah.
Well, I think that is all the time and battery power that we have for this week. So, our apologies for the short episode, but we will be back in, 2 weeks with a new episode.
Which will have wine in it again.
Thank the Lord. The Lord is risen.
Not yet, on Sunday.
I know, someone was like, I was like, oh god, I can't wait till Sunday, I can go on Twitter again. They're like, oh no, you can stop on Friday. And I was like, oh my god, that's right.
My family, apparently my other Connecticut cousins are going to their other grandparents in Baltimore for Easter, so it's just going to be my immediate family for Easter this year. And so my mom was like, let's just do it on Saturday and then we can eat breakfast at home on Sunday. I was like, that sounds great. So I am going to break my Lenten vows, or terminate my Lenten vows, on Saturday night when we celebrate the Feast of Easter.
Nice.
Even if it's not actually Easter yet.
Okay, well, that is all the time we have, and my battery is at 20%. Woo! Yay,
made it.
Take that, Diet Coke. Still working. And on that note, we will, please subscribe to us on iTunes. Rate us if you like us. Rate us if you don't like us. And we will see you again soon.
Yes.
Bye.